Welcome to AAA Sky. Today, we're discussing archaeoastronomy with anthropologist and AAA member Jorge Colorado. I'm Irene Pease.
And I'm Stanley Fertig. AAA Sky is produced by the Amateur Astronomers Association of New York, whose mission is to promote the study of astronomy and to emphasize its cultural and inspirational value. Find out more about us at www.aaa.org.
First, a word from the president of AAA, Brian Berg.
Hello and welcome to the next episode of AAA Sky, the official podcast of the Amateur Astronomers Association of New York. I am Brian Berg, the president of the association. Yet again, thank you all for listening to the podcasts that we are producing. We've really had some great interviews with some really interesting people and just a variety of topics, and today is no different. Today's podcast, today's interview, is with Jorge Colorado, who is a cultural astronomer. What exactly does that mean? Well, tune in to find out, but I will tell you that you will not be disappointed. As always, I encourage all of you listening to please email, call, or otherwise contact us with any questions, comments, suggestions that you have about this podcast. We are also excited to bring this to you. And again, please check out our website, AAA.org, for everything that the Amateur Astronomers Association of New York has to offer. And with that, Stan and Irene, take it away.
Jorge Colorado is an anthropologist with over a decade of experience in qualitative and quantitative research, as well as education and science communication. He earned his master's in scientific research from Evangelical University of El Salvador and postgraduate degree in science administration. For over 20 years, he has been very active in amateur astronomy and dedicated to the popularization of science. Jorge moved to New York City in 2015. In addition to his day job, he produces and posts weekly videos on his YouTube channel about a variety of science topics. There's lots of astronomy, but also geology, anthropology, archaeology, and more, as well as reviews of science fiction books and movies. I got to speak with Jorge recently about just a few astronomy-related topics. Yeah, welcome to AAA Sky, Jorge. Thank you so much for meeting with me today.
No, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. This is my first time in English, by the way.
Well, we're super honored that we got to be your first in English interview. You're an anthropologist, or you studied anthropology, and you study cultural astronomy, both archaeoastronomy and ethnoastronomy. And I want to make sure we define some of those terms for our listeners who may not be super familiar with those. First, though, I'd like to start off with anthropology, because of the few anthropologists that I've known, they don't all necessarily agree on the definition of anthropology. So I'm curious to hear what your definition or description of anthropology would be.
Well, yeah. So my first career is anthropology. I made I have a master's degree in science, methodology of science, and a postgrad in science administration. And, my field is social cultural anthropologist, because I've studied in Latin America. So in Latin America, we have a mix of different anthropology from England, from Europe, and from United States. So we have, our field is about the cultures and the society. So anthropology is a science, of course, a social science. We investigate, we research with the people and the expression of the people and the culture, the meaning of or ideas about the universe, about the cosmos, about religion, about the economy, you know, the prohibition, like incest, you know, different things. The anthropology is super difficult, it's super hard, because it's not like, you know, it's not like stars. We are super complicated.
It sounds like diverse, a lot of a wide variety of topics would apply.
Yeah. No, it's more easy to understand how the stars explode than us, you know. we change our mind every second in different ways, and why the people, yeah, sometimes you take decision against your interest. Why? So it's difficult to understand this, why we believe in that thing. So it's a hard, it's not easy. And of course, it's not like a chemistry, it's not like a biology. So we need to be super, the ethic is important. Because we talk with people, and they have feelings, they have they love, they have families. So it's not easy, but I like it.
Yeah, it sounds very complicated. One, to stay current if things are constantly changing. And also, just because you mentioned you're working with people, you're not working with a plant or a rock or some inanimate thing or some other living thing. You're working with human beings, which just adds an amazing level of complexity. That's a really interesting way to
put
it.
personally, I am the middle of the social science and the natural science. This is me. So this is why I have a lot of interest in astronomy, in biology, in different natural science. But this is me. This is why I have super interest in natural science.
Well, that was actually what I wanted to ask you about next, was because I know you're an avid amateur astronomer. You've been active in local groups all over, wherever you've lived, it seems like. And so I'm curious, which came first, your interest in anthropology or your interest in astronomy, or did they kind of co-evolve? How did that happen?
Both. So, well, I am from Salvador, by the way. I came to the United States 5 years ago. And when I was a teenager, so years and years ago, I had super interest in astronomy and the evolution of the human evolution. So, and then I tried to understand the ancients, Mesoamerican people, because I'm from El Salvador, so I have a genetic links with the Native Americans. And this is why I always have interest in astronomy, in the social science, and this is why I have interest in astronomy. And I start in astronomy in the 1990s. Yeah, so years and years ago as amateur astronomer. I was part of the original, we found an astronomy club in El Salvador. The astronomy club is the Salvadorian Astronomy Association. In Spanish, it's different. Asociación Salvadoreña de Astronomía. And I was even in 2012, 2015, I was president of the Astronomy Association in El Salvador. Then I moved from Salvador to the United States. I'm here. Now I'm part of the AAA.
And we're so glad to have you. I know you've been very active. And as I tell people, you're a great follow on Twitter. I love following you on Twitter. I mostly like the astronomy stuff, but there's a lot of really other interesting stuff.
How do you understand it? Because my Twitter isn't in Spanish.
Right. Yeah. So I click on it, especially if it's a picture. If it's you and it looks long, if it's short, sometimes I don't. But if it's long, I'll click on it. And there's a button that says translate to English because it knows that I speak English. I just translate it. It's an extra click, but it's worth it. Definitely worth it.
Yeah. So this is why you understand my.
Yeah. So if I don't understand, I don't necessarily like it, but.
Okay. Yeah. I think it's good translation. Yeah. For sure.
Mainly in El Salvador, you've done some archaeoastronomy and ethnoastronomy. Do you want to just give us a quick rundown of what each of those is?
it's a new field. Archaeoastronomy. We have around, in general, the anthropology start with, the anthropology put attention in astronomy and the cosmologic ideas about the universe, maybe 50, 60 years ago. So it's new. Yeah, it's a new science. It's between the anthropology and astronomy. But it's about the ideas about the universe from culture, ancient culture, or even now, how the people think about the universe, the stars. And of course, we understand the difference between cultures, and in the Asian, in Europe, is different. Of course, they have different ideas about the universe. It's more mythological. So you know the Pleiades, Perseus, Cassiopeia, and Central America and South America. We have a lot of culture. They put attention in the stars as well, and we have a few information about that, mm-hmm. because the conquistadors, the colony times was super hard for the people, Native American people. When I say Latin American, it's not just a Native American in the United States, it's Native American in Mexico and Central America and South America. We call indios or pueblos indígenas. And they build, cities according to the position of the stars or planets. And they have a super complicated calendars. Yeah. And this is part of the archaeoastronomy. So the archaeoastronomy tried to explain why if this building of this pyramid, they have some kind of link with the stars or planet. So archaeology and astronomy is archaeoastronomy. Anthropology and astronomy is ethnoastronomy. So I prefer the ethnoastronomy because it's more my field than archaeoastronomy. But I made some research about archaeoastronomy in El Salvador. I worked for a couple of years in one part of El Salvador. We have an ancient archaeological site we call Cihuatán. Cihuatán is not too popular it's not like a Chichen Itza or Copan, yes,
Chaco Canyon.
Yeah, exactly.
I did teach a class briefly on archaeoastronomy a little while back, and I mean, one of the exciting things we got to share with people were that the pyramids, not just old world, there's a lot of pyramids in the new world, in these regions you've been talking about.
So we start to research there because it's nobody make a research in this place. We went and we tried to figure out what happened about the pyramids, about the different part of the archaeological sites. And we realized that one of the platforms of the ancients, Cihuatán people, they align this platform with the sun in the day when the sun pass in the tropics 1 day or 2 days in El Salvador in 2 days in the year. You can see the sun 90 degrees over you. You know that. This is impossible here in the United States over the tropic, the Cancer Tropic.
Right. So if you're between the equator and the Tropic of Cancer, you get that height.
Yeah, exactly. So this platform, they have some kind of alineation, align with the sun, the sunset on that day. This is the Cihuatán place, archaeological site. The other one is San Andrés. So one of the pyramids, we check everything, and we realize that one of the pyramids, they're aligned with the sun, the sunset, during the solsticio. Yeah, summer solstice. Yeah, solsticio. Solsticio in English.
Right.
Yeah, June.
Okay. So I'm curious, you said you're figuring this out, and I'm curious if you, like, if you're making measurements and like figuring out the angles and then comparing it to like sky charts, and
we
then
do
you check it by actually standing there on that day and witnessing it? Fantastic.
Yes.
That sounds like fun.
At least Cihuatán, in San Andrés, you can't check with your eyes, because the government, they have a big forest, so you can't destroy the forest just for see the sunset. But we have we use different, we know the position of the sun exactly, and so this, it's not a big deal. So I think the most problematic is try to figure out which is the position of the sun during the different months. And you need to understand the sunset and the horizon of this particular site. And that's it.
So I know for some of the older archaeoastronomy sites around the world, like, I don't know if precession has made a difference. Have you seen that in any of the sites you've studied in Mesoamerica, that you have to take precession into account, the precessing of the north of our axis of rotation? If that's shifted, that you have to take that into account in your calculations and figuring out the alignments? Are they newer? So that
that
effect?
Yeah, we can do it, but it's... In Cihuatán and San Andrés, it's around 1,000 years ago. It's not like Egypt, that. So yeah, we check everything about that, but it's not a big deal in Central America, at least with the Cihuatán and San Andrés, because they are, in general, is yesterday, It's not like 5,000 years ago, 7,000 years ago. It's just 1,000 years ago. So it's not the big deal.
Only 1,000. I have to say, though,
only 1,000.
It boggles my mind that, like, even me trying to figure that out without using like the help of stellarium or something, I'm just like, I don't even want to think about it. And just knowing that people did this, over 1,000 years ago, and there were good enough mathematicians and engineers to build this, to have that alignment. It's amazing. It's really impressive.
Exactly. And they never use, the fractions. They don't have fractions. It's like a Romans. They don't have the Romans. We have right now, we have the 5.0, 5.2, 5.7. But the Mayas, the Romans, the Aztecs, they don't have the 0.5, 0.6. So the fraction, they don't have fraction. They try to do the best, and they made a lot of incredible things.
Incredible. So do you have a favorite site in El Salvador that you eventually, when some people, someday when people can visit again, is there a site in El Salvador that's like your favorite?
Cihuatán is one of my favorite sites, and the other one is Joya de Serén. We'll put here. Joya de Serén. It's like a Pompeii.
Ooh.
It's like a Pompeii in Mesoamerican.
Right, because you have volcanoes there too.
Yeah, a lot. So, a lot of volcanoes.
Very active. I know some geologists who are from that region, and they're like, oh yeah, there's so much great geology happening.
Exactly. So Joya de Serén is like a Pompeii. But it's the situation here is not temples. It's just a house of the people. So you understand how the ancient Mayas lived, regular people like you and me are. We are not kings. We are not presidents. We are just regular, normal people. They have the Joya de Serén is a place who is a place. There we understand how the people and the regular people live 1,200 years ago. So it's super important. You can Google that. If you Google, you will understand everything more than my information.
No, it's all right.
I have a lot of information, but it's more in Spanish.
No, it's okay. And really, we want to give our listeners some ideas for, you know, destinations. So if you could go anywhere in the world, like of all, because I'm assuming you've been to like some of these other like really popular archaeoastronomy sites with like pyramids and alignments, or what would be like the top one that you'd say, all right, if you only ever get to like one of these places, this is the one that you have to go see for our listeners?
Egypt.
Okay. Have you been?
Yeah. No, this okay. is my, it's part of my, in my bucket list. It's in my bucket list.
Bucket list. All right. Yeah. So the pyramids, like the pyramids at Giza.
Yeah, exactly. And the temples. I have a, you know, I have a super interest in Egypt. The mystery, it's a beautiful culture, the art, and it's amazing. So this is why I want to go there and check. I was in El Salvador, I was in Mesoamerica, so I understand. I lived there. I was teacher for 10 years about Mesoamerican culture. So I understand the Mesoamericans, and I have a super curiosity about the Egypt and everything there. So this is why I say Egypt.
So yeah, it's more different from what you're used to.
Yeah, it's super different, exactly.
Well, that'd be interesting. Like as someone who's like so familiar with Mesoamerican like archaeoastronomy, to go and see something so completely different. So another, the last kind of question about like archaeoastronomy. Do you have a recommendation, or do you know of any sites like near New York City, or you know, like the closest site near New York City, like if someone could drive to in a day or so? You're familiar with any sites on the East Coast that would be? I know.
In East Coast is hard. I know the Cahokia site. You know Cahokia?
No, where is that?
Cahokia is near to San Luis, Missouri. It's a national monument. It's in Illinois, but it's just a couple of miles from San Luis, Missouri. They have a pyramids there, super big pyramids.
Really?
Like a Teotihuacan, super big pyramids.
In Illinois, they have pyramids? How yeah. did I not know they had pyramids in Illinois?
I don't understand. I don't understand why. When I came, I said to someone, oh, I want to go there. I want to go to Illinois. What do you want to go there? Oh, because I want to see the pyramids. Pyramids in USA? Yes. Yeah. It's Cahokia. Okay. Cahokia is one of the most interesting places in USA. It's a big pyramid. You know, it's not like a Chichen Itza. They use different materials. They use more stone, more, the bricks from lodo, the bricks with soil, with okay. water.
Okay, they like mud mix. Bricks?
Yeah, mud bricks, exactly. Than different stone, you know. But it's a super good place. And they have some kind of alienations with the stars. But you know, it's not popular.
Yeah, because I've never heard of it.
I tried to understand why it's not popular. And I think it's that in this country, United States, they start to count after the Mayflower.
Yeah, they discount the 1,000-plus years history before.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think they don't have link, you know, like a history link with the Native American. Mm-hmm. But I have the link for Latin Americans. This is why I have interest in that. They have a corn. They have a connection, economic connection with Central America and South America. So fruits or seeds or people from South America move across Central America and get Missy Illinois a thousand years ago.
So there were trade routes going all up and down.
Yeah, trades, exactly. Oh, yeah. Exactly.
All over. Yeah, yeah. But I have just one last question that we like to ask all of our guests on AAA Sky. You said you've been in New York City for a few years now, very active in astronomy. So I know you do a lot of observing, but astronomy related or not, what would be your favorite, like, must-see, must-do place in New York City? Like, what's your favorite place to go and visit in New York City?
The Museum of Natural History. This is the first. The second is the Metropolitan Museum and Central Park. Number three.
And they're right across from each other. So you just go from one to the other.
Exactly.
And
that's why the American Museum of Natural History is because they have a super good collection in fossils, in meteorites. You know, the planetary is amazing. Why the Metropolitan Museum? Because, you know, the culture, the ancient culture is there. They have a super important collection about the art. And why the Central Park is, because if you go there, you can see birds, you can see the ice age.
Oh, yeah. The glacial striations.
Exactly.
Yeah, we took our geology classes there to look at the incredible rocks in Central Park.
The geology about the ancient, the ice age. Actually, I have a YouTube channel. I have a video in my YouTube channel about the geology of Central Park.
We'll be sure to link that one in particular in the show notes.
Yeah.
I mean, for someone who likes all the physical sciences as well as the cultural aspects, anthropology, it sounds like a great combo, like a good day's exploration between the two museums with Central Park in the center.
Yeah, exactly. So the Central Park is super nice because you can understand. For me, it's for sure. Let me see. Oh, yes. We call La Era del Hielo. It's like an ice age.
Yeah, if you want to have... Oh, perfect. Yeah, so I'll get the link for that. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Well, great. Thank you so much. This has been really delightful. Again, thank you so much for braving the English interview. I think you did great. And maybe we'll have you host one in Spanish.
We
at
have
some point. We'll see.
In my country, we have a word, you know, like we call bayunco. Bayunco means silly. Mm-hmm. Silly because you try to explain a lot of things, but sometimes your mind is in a different place.
I can't even do that in English. Like, my brain forgets words. So what's my excuse?
Yeah, but no, I think it's okay.
All right.
And now I'm more comfortable than a couple of years ago. So
yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much.
No, thank you too, because you invite me.
So Jorge provided what I thought was a really great, concise contrast between archaeoastronomy and ethnoastronomy. So he said archaeoastronomy, that's more structures. So that's the combination of archaeology and astronomy. And then ethnoastronomy, that's getting more into people and culture. So that's anthropology and astronomy. So like archaeology versus anthropology, you know, but then obviously with astronomy mixed in. So Indiana Jones versus Margaret Mead, plus Neil deGrasse Tyson, right? So he talked a lot about some really interesting locations, and we'll make sure those are linked because I know I'm hoping to visit some. And Stanley, you've already been to some of these spots, right?
Yes, I have. Notably, I have not yet been to El Salvador, so I haven't seen Cihuatan, where the buildings are aligned with the solstice. But I have been to Chichen Itza, which is a fabulous place. The large pyramid of Chichen Itza, if you go there at the time of either the equinoxes, then there's an optical illusion where it looks, the shadows cast by the sun on the main look like snakes crawling down the main staircase of the pyramid. And there's also an observatory there, which the Mayans built. And there are windows in the observatory which are reputed to follow the path of Venus, which allow you to see the path of Venus at some point in time in the sky. Although I wasn't able to verify that myself.
Unverified, but potentially interesting. And you've been to some other locations around the world as well, right?
Yeah, several years ago, I went to Angkor Wat in Cambodia, which was a huge city. And there's the main temple has these spires or towers. And at the spring equinox, at sunrise, the building is aligned more or less east-west. But at the spring equinox, the sun rises behind the central tower, and just when it gets up, and it's therefore it's blocked by the tower, you can't see it, but just when it reaches the top of the tower, it's perfectly aligned above the tower like the dot on an eye.
Or like the flame of a candle for people who don't dot their eyes.
Right.
Don't have eyes to dot.
Right. But what's amazing is they had to adjust the orientation of the building because since Angkor Wat is not directly on the equator, the sun does not rise perfectly vertically up. It slides off a little bit to the side as it rises. So they adjusted the orientation of the building so that just when it reaches the top of the tower and it becomes visible, it's right there.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing about the sites that we were talking about. They're in the tropics. So like Jorge said, like if you're in the tropics, like between the two tropics, Cancer and Capricorn, then there's this other alignment where you could have the sun directly overhead once or twice a year, depending on where you are. So we don't get that at our latitude. But we have other fun things. I know I haven't been to like, you know, some of these like pyramids yet or anything, but I've been to the Serpent Mounds in southern Ohio, not nearly as extensive, but quite old. I don't think they know the actual age of the mounds, but they think they were constructed by two different cultures that lived in that region, one around 1,000 years ago and one closer to 2,000 years ago.
Wow.
So they're kind of like, there's some burial mounds and then there's like a serpent shaped, it kind of snakes and winds in a twisty shape. And there's different parts of its body that are supposed to point in different directions. It was cloudy and hazy and it's a little foggy when I was there, but pretty neat. Just, you know, that we do have cool stuff in the US.
And he also mentioned this place in southern Illinois called Cahokia. Have you been there?
I can't believe that I haven't even heard of that. Like, how did I not know that we have pyramids in the United States, like in Illinois? Like, I have family there, and I'm actually planning to go and maybe do a road trip through part of the Midwest this summer. So we might have to stop off so I can tell people, yes, I've been to the Great Pyramids of Illinois, like not the Sears Tower, but like actual pyramids, because I just think that's amazing. Need to get the word out on that.
Definitely.
So.
Maybe we should schedule a AAA trip.
AAA trip. Go see the pyramids. I think we might be able to do that. But yeah, I can definitely appreciate Jorge's interest in, you know, studying people. I feel like astronomy is just one of these things that connects people. I like to say it's like a common thread in the tapestry of humanity, because it not only connects people all around the world today, but throughout time, because all of our ancestors basically looked up and saw the same night sky, and so many cultures incorporated different aspects of what they observed into their daily lives.
And into their architecture. And now, here's Irene's celestial forecast.
Thanks, Stanley. Hey, planets! Mercury, Venus, and Mars share the evening sky in Taurus and Gemini, and Mars has a new addition to its surface. China's Zhurong rover is now roving around on Utopia Planitia, so it's pretty exciting. Mercury and Venus will have a nice conjunction on May 28th, appearing less than half a degree apart. You can look for Mercury just to the left of a much brighter Venus. As Earth catches up to Saturn in our orbits, we now see Saturn appearing to move westward night after night. This retrograde motion will continue until October 11th, after we've passed Saturn and moved ahead a little bit in our race around the sun. The moon joins Saturn and Jupiter in the early morning sky from May 30th to June 2nd. So if you want to look for Jupiter during the daytime, June 1st would be the best date to try it this lunar cycle. From New York City, Jupiter will appear about 5 degrees north of the moon and probably best to view it between 7 and 9 a.m. On the early morning of June 3rd, the moon passes by Neptune in the northeast corner of Aquarius. That's right, Neptune and Uranus are going to be rejoining our planetary scene in the morning sky. So we'll have more about those through the summer. And if you're looking ahead, you might want to think about where you'll want to view the June 10th annular solar eclipse. It'll be a partial from New York City, just in progress at sunrise. More on that next time. But as usual, this solar eclipse is paired with a lunar eclipse. That's going to occur on May 25th, and it'll be visible for most of the Pacific Ocean, so we're basically missing it from New York City. But you can watch a video about it on Jorge's YouTube channel. And our featured constellation is Hydra. So this is the largest constellation by area in the night sky. Of course, the second largest being our previous featured constellation, Virgo. In the evenings, Hydra snakes from south-southeast to due west along an impressive stretch of the horizon, with the ringlet of its head just south of Cancer the Crab and its tail stretching to Libra the Scales. A few smaller constellations are kind of nestled in its curves like a little celestial eye spy collection. Tucked between Hydra's bumps, a crow and a cup, a sextant, an air pump. For all its area, Hydra doesn't have very many bright stars. Second magnitude Alford is its brightest, and all the other stars in Hydra, third magnitude, are dimmer. This faint collection of stars might not align with impressive structures or celestial events, but Hydra and its neighboring constellations are a nice challenge to search for from dark sites. See if you can spy them after astronomical twilight. That's our celestial forecast. Back to you, Stanley.
That's our show. Tune in next time when we discuss galactic interlopers, among other things, with Dr. Allison Sheffield. Until then, stop by www.aaa.org to learn more about the AAA and how you can become part of it.
AAA Sky audio editing and original music is by Preston Staley. Our technical producer is Parker Bossier.